As our nation continues to be consumed by the debate over immigrants, it might do us well to remember the life and work of a woman from Coldwater. Frances Keller rose from very, very humble roots in Coldwater to become a nationally respected 20th century reformer. She worked in prison reform for women's issues. She championed the causes of immigrants, rural and African American workers, and she challenged the nation to think about what it really meant to be an American. John K. Press is a professor at Namsol University in South Korea. His profile, Frances Keller, Defender of the Downtrodden, is in Michigan History Magazine. Welcome to the program, John.
Thank you, Cynthia. Good to be here.
And you've also written a book about this remarkable woman, and the title really jumps out at me, Founding Mother, Frances Keller and the Creation of Modern America. Why was Frances Keller a founding mother?
Well, it's a huge claim, but I think I can substantiate it. She founded organizations like the National Urban League and the American Arbitration Association that are still with us today. But she also launched the idea of multiculturalism. She was huge in adult education. She spearheaded the ability of women to be involved in sports and in politics. She was instrumental in getting women the right to vote. And she was officially in charge of greeting the Ellis Island generation as they came to America. So there are a lot of claims that say she is our founding mother.
Now, this woman who's the defender of the downtrodden, as the headline in Michigan History Magazine calls her, she certainly knew what that was like, wasn't she? Because her early years were very, very difficult.
Yeah, well, she grew up in Coldwater, Michigan, and she was raised by a single mother, and she was the poorest person in the town. She actually had to drop out of high school to help her mother as a domestic worker. And in a small town like Coldwater, Michigan, people know when you're poor. It's not like being in an anonymous big city. So, yeah, she grew up under the stigma of poverty.
And that clearly fueled her life's work.
I think so. I mean, her first book is about women who are domestic workers and they're being exploited. Her second book is about African-American women and southern penitentiaries. And her third one explores the empowerment of women through sport. So being involved in women's issues was really key for her before she came into protecting immigrants more generally.
So, John, we're talking about the late 1800s. What got Frances Keller out of poverty and into Cornell's law school and then beyond?
It's pretty interesting. She was adopted by two, we say now, I guess, spinster sisters, Mary and Frances Eddy, and they took her into their home and nurtured her. She was also nurtured by a Presbyterian preacher whose name was H.P. Cullen, and they took her to chautauquas. Like these were lectures series that happened in Bayview. They lectured her themselves, and they taught her and helped her to pass the very tough entrance exam to get into Cornell.
And her activism started when?
Well, she wrote a column for the Coldwater Republican newspaper. It was a gossip column, so there's a little bit of activism in that. But when she went to Cornell, she fought to establish a women's rowing team. And this is her first activism. This later led to her writing many articles on women in sports and her big book on women in sports, Athletic Games in the Education of Women.
And tell us how she came to challenge what was then the widely held belief that biology made people criminals. I mean, it really digs into that nature versus nurture discussion.
Sure. Well, when she went to the University of Chicago for her graduate work, there was a guy who dominated criminology, her field. His name was Cesar Lombroso. And he held that biological characteristics, it made people lesbian, it made people prostitutes. And she replicated his studies. She went to college students and then white women in northern prisons and measured them using a machine called a chemograph. And then she went for 2 years through southern penitentiaries measuring black women using the chemograph. And she found that face shape and physiological characteristics had no association with criminal behavior.
So she was using science.
It was a progenitor of the lie detector. She would check people's respiration and their heartbeat when they were given shocks, when they lied, when they talked about their past. It was very scientific. And she called this apparatus weird, but she only employed it to defeat the dominant force in criminology, which was this guy against Cesar Lombroso.
And was she heard? Was she able to shift the common view?
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's actually in criminology studies, you'll see that she is considered a seminal leader in this field and shifting the view to the view that environment actually impacts how we turn out. And her book, Experimental Sociology on Her Trip Through the Southern Penitentiaries, is a big indictment of Southern culture, not only their legal practices, but the racism and discrimination that besiege African Americans and turns them to poverty and crime.
And give us an idea, when were these books being written? So she was very much a woman ahead of her time.
Yeah, this is in 1898.
Mm.
So this is very, very early. And this really was the bridge to her working also with immigrants, because after she worked with the Southern, the black people in the Southern states, she started working with domestic workers. And some of these domestic workers were immigrants from Europe, but many of them were black women coming north to work as domestic workers. So she set up a protective league to protect these black women coming north as she was defending immigrant domestic workers. And this became the National Urban League that exists today.
We're talking with John Kay Press about activist Frances Keller, who rose from her very humble roots in Coldwater, Michigan, to become a nationally respected reformer. John's book is titled Founding Mother Frances Keller and the Creation of Modern America. So let's dig into the work she did on behalf of immigrants. And it was called the Americanization Movement. Just what was that?
Sure. The Americanization movement was a huge, huge movement. It involved local people, mayors, immigrants, presidents, and it went from 1906 to 1921. It was for the Ellis Island immigration generation. And I was really interested actually initially in studying the Americanization movement, and I found that she was the head of it in every phase. And people portray it as very oppressive, as the Americanizers wanted to turn immigrants into, you know, white Anglo-Saxon Protestants, and it oppressed them. It made them go towards cultural conformity. But when I studied it, I found out it was really the roots of multiculturalism, and that she was behind promoting this vision of America as a multicultural nation.
And I know, as you put it, her goal and your words were to combat exclusiveness with inclusiveness and rejection with appreciation. What did that rejection and exclusiveness look like in early 20th century America?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, this comes back to whether or not the personal is political. Keller was a transgender lesbian woman. So she lived with a woman for 47 years. She always dressed like a man. She was known in Coldwater, excluded in Coldwater for looking and talking like a boy. And, you know, she wanted to be included personally. And so I think that informed her efforts to have America accept immigrants as they were. In terms of programs, she started what's called Americanization Day. And this ran for 4 years. It was in 150 cities. It was huge. It ran from 1915 through 1918. And what it was on the 4th of July, Independence Day, she would have the newly naturalized citizens march in parades. And they would march in their traditional costumes. And long-term Americans would come out and applaud them and greet them and welcome them. So it was really It was including them as they were in their traditional costumes in America, embracing them as immigrants in America.
Frances was also involved in presidential elections as well, wasn't she?
Yeah, and this is amazing because this was in a time when she wasn't even allowed to vote. She was the only woman on President Roosevelt's 1912 progressive run for presidency in his executive council. And also in 1916, when the Republican candidate Charles Evans Hughes ran for president, she started what she called a women's train and got a bunch of women activists and went across the country stumping for him. And this was at the time really radical. These are women speaking not just on behalf of suffrage, but on immigration and industrial policy, on war policy. So she's trying to really consciously break the mold of women not being in politics, and if they are, only speaking about the right to vote.
Did her activism last her entire life, or was there a point where she kind of laid down her arms and maybe went into private life?
No matter how many times she lost battles, like she lost both of those presidential battles, she kept on fighting. In 1921, the United States voted to pretty much end immigration, and so her Americanization work was no longer needed. What she did at that point was she transitioned into studying international arbitration, and she created what is today the largest arbitration association in the world, the American Arbitration Association, and she started working on international trade agreements. And she created a trade agreement between 22 states in the Western Hemisphere before she died.
When did she die?
She died in 1952.
So she had this lifetime of activism on so many levels. Why do you think more of us have not heard of Frances Keller?
Well, it's an interesting question. I mean, and in her time, she was as famous as Jane Addams was. And I think that one reason is that we're more comfortable with Jane Addams, who had settlement houses, who had this sort of motherly appearance, right? She was the mother to the immigrants. Mm. Keller went to industrial sites dressed as a man and took on, you know, our labor policy. So this sort of aggressive transgender female hasn't been something that America's been willing to celebrate. She's also curiously absent from all the intellectual histories. And that's because I think there's lingering sexism in intellectual historian circles. They treat her just as this activist, right? Not as a real thinker, but just somebody who led some movements and did some marches. You know, even though she wrote seminal books in criminology and labor theory and sports, she's just considered an activist.
And why have you taken up her cause? What is it that has just got you so involved where you have a website, franceskeller.com, you've written the book, you've got the piece now in Michigan History Magazine. Why does she speak to you so clearly?
Well, there are a couple of reasons. One is that I am into transgender rights, and I think that she would make a great role model. She should be in the curriculum of our schools as such. So I think it's important for her to look at her that way. But it's more just out of respect. I mean, I came to Americanization, honestly, as a person that was in favor of Americanization in its what I consider to be its right-wing form. I am a culturist. I believe in culturism, not multiculturalism, its opposite. And so I studied this going, oh, I'm going to study this great right-wing movement. I found out it was a left-wing movement. Mm-hmm. And when I read about Keller, I more and more just fell in love with her as a person, whether I agree with her or not. She was an amazing force, an amazing role model for all of us.
John K. Press is the author of Founding Mother, Frances Keller and the Creation of Modern America. And his profile of Keller is in the November-December issue of Michigan History Magazine. And the website that he keeps, really, you can learn lots about her, is franceskeller.com. And we should note that's Franceskeller.com. John Press, it was great talking with you. Thank you so very much.
Thanks for having me, Cynthia.